Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode number 527, I'm welcoming to the show Maya Smart.
That oral language foundations, that was one of the biggest things that I didn't understand as a parent, that kids need so much language nutrition to flourish as learners. And so it's not just about phonics, although that's critically important for a time whenever your school or your homeschool gets into that, depending on their situation. It's critically important, shouldn't last forever if we know how to do it right. But the building vocabulary, the talking, the back and forth exchanges, that's forever as a parent.
Maya is a mom. She's also a former journalist turned literacy advocate, and she's the author of the new book, Reading for Our Lives, a literacy action plan from birth to six. And her goal is to raise a nation of readers and parents and caregivers and give tips and tools to help you in your daily life with young kids. I feel like she gives a very, very practical acronym that's in the title of this episode that will hopefully stick with you if you have kids in that age from birth to six, and that you can stay connected with Maya and gain more information and tips from her when it comes to helping your kids learn to read. So let's get right to it. Here we go. Maya, welcome to the Don't Mom Alone podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh man, I don't think I've ever done an episode on this exact topic, and we've had over 500 episodes, so you get a long runway. The only thing that comes close is I did have a speech pathologist friend come on and talk about early speech and language development, so that just kind of helps you out, kind of tees you up to talk about early literacy. And so first of all, I'd love for you to just kind of introduce yourself, and then we'll get into the good stuff.
I am Maya Smart. I'm the mom of one. And when I went into it, I just felt like I needed a manual. I hadn't babysat. I didn't have little cousins. And so there were a lot of unknowns. So my background is in journalism. And this book is really just the result of me asking a ton of questions to figure out how to raise a reader, and then sharing what I learned that was practical and doable for real parents living busy real lives in book form.
So how old is your child now?
She is now 13. Okay. So I can report that the strategies work. She's a skilled, fluent reader.
Okay. And all of mine did classical education where they're all about reading to them, reading aloud, and then they don't really push phonics until first grade. I mean, there's exposure to letters, but real reading chapter books isn't really even part of it until first grade, like seven. Do you find that to be kind of the marker, or do you find that schools are wanting kids to read more earlier?
I find that schools have high expectations for what kids do in certain grades, but they haven't necessarily built bridges with families to have kids on track to meet these milestones and things that are written in school standards. So I think what's been missing, and that what I hope the book provides, is that perspective for parents of all the things that you're doing with babies and toddlers and preschoolers that don't look like phonics, but do support reading and, importantly, reading comprehension. I think oftentimes parents are thinking just about sounding words out and matching those speech sounds to letters that kids see in print, but vocabulary and background knowledge are such critical parts of being skilled readers. Most kids at some point will be able to sound out what you put in front of them, but they need to understand the words. They need to be able to make sense of paragraphs and passages and pages. So as parents, we can focus on both of those things and nurture both of those sets of skills over time.
Okay, so what you mentioned, there's a myth that parents hold on to, and we want to disrupt this myth. When parents are thinking about reading and they're thinking about their role, they kind of put it all in one basket. And what is that basket?
I think many parents think that just reading aloud to kids is the thing to do and the main thing to do. And I think that really, as a parent, we always are wearing all of these different hats, and that applies to reading as well. So a big part, as I mentioned before, is we're kids' chief vocabulary builders. So the words that they will be able to recognize when they're reading them on paper are words that we've shared with them in speech and everyday conversations, just going through life and asking them questions. So I think talk is a big part of what parents do that nurtures reading. And then, of course, reading to them is wonderful, and it introduces them to all these words and worlds that they wouldn't encounter in everyday life. So that's a great foundational family ritual, if you will. But parents can also teach. And I think that some parents are hesitant to do that, but you can teach your children the names, shapes, and sounds of letters. And that really does lays a wonderful groundwork for formal school.
How do they not feel overwhelmed by that or become the flashcard crazy, we're going to do letters everywhere kind of parents? What's the right balance in that?
I always emphasize with parents talk primarily, and it's an acronym and it stands for take turns, ask questions, label and point, and keep the conversation going. And so it takes some of the pressure off of feeling like you have to do lessons and, perform school and home. No, it's you're going through your daily things that you do with your child anyway. You're changing diapers, you're preparing meals, you're cleaning up, you're driving places, you're walking places. And all of those are the perfect opportunities to talk and introduce words. And part of the advice I got when I was a young mom was to narrate everything I was doing with my daughter. If you're walking in the park, talk about the flowers and their colors and textures and all that. But what the research indicates is that it's not just the words the parent is talking at the child. The real learning and power and brain building and all of these things that we want for our kids comes from them trying to express themselves and them responding. So that's why the taking turns is first in that acronym, and the asking questions. So you're leaving space for them to reply. And again, that applies to even babies and toddlers who aren't really speaking to you in words and sentences that you understand yet. So even pre-verbal infants can be thought of as being in conversation with you, and you just treat those coos and babbles as if they're talk.
So they coo and you say something back, and then you give them space to say another coo and say something back. And everybody's confused. They're like, wait a second, I thought we were talking about reading, right?
Absolutely. That oral language foundations, that was one of the biggest things that I didn't understand as a parent, that kids need so much language nutrition to flourish as learners. And so it's not just about phonics, although that's critically important for a time whenever your school or your homeschool gets into that, depending on their situation. It's critically important, shouldn't last forever if we know how to do it right. But the building vocabulary, the talking, the back and forth exchanges, that's forever as a parent. My daughter is now 13. I'm still having back and forth conversations with her. I'm still introducing new words. She's still asking me questions about words. She's reading a novel now, and she pointed out that the word blunt was used in different contexts, like a person's personality could be blunt, and also this object could be blunt. And she's, giving me this whole description of, a very short, simple word that she could sound out right years ago, but it's continuing to develop layers of meaning, shades of meaning over time. And that's really important. That's how kids thrive when they're reading higher and higher level material in school and just to navigate life.
So let's re-say it. So the T-A-L-K, you've told taking turns, asking questions. What was the L?
The L is labeling and pointing. So some parents will say, I don't have anything to talk about, or I don't know what to say to this child that's not really saying anything to me or responding in a way that I can understand. So the L is not like printing out labels and sticking them on objects in your house. I just mean giving words to describe things. And so I tell the tired, sleep deprived, busy mom, you can always just take your index finger and point at anything around you in your environment and give it, name the color, give them that label for the thing. This desk is white, or it's smooth, or it's rough, or it's shiny, or you're walking out of the door, point outside and describe the weather. So it's just sort of a reminder that there is all this vocabulary waiting for us to introduce to our kids, and all we have to do is label and point. I like the point part because particularly with little ones, it brings their attention in line with yours. And then you'll also become a little more sensitive to where they're looking and also what they're pointing at. And that gives you ways to be responsive to what they're already interested in. So they're pointing and you say, oh, I see the kitty too. Isn't it furry? And then they say whatever they say and you reply. So that was the K, the keep the conversation going. Just whenever you get those turns, those coos, those babbles, the words, whatever you're getting from them, try to expand, extend, respond to keep it going, because we know that there is a strong correlation between the back and forth conversational exchanges kids have as toddlers and where their vocabulary is as middle schoolers.
This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. And last weekend, I was at a lake with some friends and their daughters, and one of the girls had something going on with her foot. And I was like, hey, have y'all ever heard of Active Skin Repair? Because one of my boys had a rug burn on his finger, and the other one had cut his finger with a razor and an accident. And we have been putting Active Skin Repair on it, and it is amazing how quickly they are healing, because Active Skin Repair is using a special molecule called hypochlorous acid. Now, acid sounds like it's going to burn, but it doesn't. When it's applied to your skin, the molecule works to mimic the natural immune response to then cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support the healing. So whether it is a cut or a scrape or a burn or sunburn, hello summer, diaper rash, any kind of skin damage, it's safe and non-toxic. It's suitable for all skin types, even if your child struggles with rosacea or eczema or has acne-prone skin. There are over 500,000 happy customers, thousands of five-star reviews, and ingredients so safe and clean, they can be used from the youngest member of your family to the oldest. And you have one simple solution for your family's skin. And I love that they have two different, well, the skin repair I have has two different methods of delivery. One is like a spray bottle and one is more of a gel, hydrogel. So visit activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair, and to get 20% off of your order, use DMA. So visit activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and to get 20% off of your order when you use the code DMA. So interesting. So you are a young mom and you're wanting to figure out how to raise a leader and you're doing research, and then you stumble across this verbal part of it and you come up with the TALK, an acronym. What else did you discover in your research about early literacy? It's hard to say.
I discovered that a lot of, when we think of ourselves as teachers, as parents, we have this mental picture often of formal schooling and chalkboards and desks that don't move. But what I learned from talking to all these experts in all these different fields is that it's the lessons are simple. The research and all the statistical analysis and stuff that they're doing to come up with the recommendations is complicated, but it really does come down to tuning into your child, being nurturing, being loving, being interested in what they're interested in, and responding. So much of it is that simple, and that there are just a few critical things we can bring their attention to, again, through talk. As a parent, teaching is talking in those everyday contexts. So you don't always have to have a book in hand. If there is an exit sign in a building that you're in, or a stop sign when you're walking through a neighborhood, or a cereal box or a graphic t-shirt, anything that has letters on it is an opportunity for you, again, to point, label, and point. That's S. S says, you know, it curves this way and that way, and really using your finger in that tracing motion to bring their attention to print is a really powerful lesson for kids who are, you know, 2, 3, 4. And when they're starting to show interest in print, pay attention to it, because those are powerful lessons that we don't think to give often as parents.
So good. So you're kind of trying to break the mold that it has to be this bedtime ritual of only reading then, that everyday interactions, opportunities, whether you're a mom who works from home or works outside the home, or, you know, that you have chances to engage with your kid, follow their lead through conversation, through pointing out. I remember when I learned the concept that, like, things like Nike or, you know, symbols that brands have, that that's one of the early reading skills, is kind of learning it as this, they could recognize that symbol goes with that brand. Talk to me about that. Is that right?
Parents will often think that their child is reading because they'll point and they'll say Target. And the child is associating it with you saying, we're going to Target. They may be looking at the bullseye. We don't always know if they're looking, recognize that those are letters, that they're individual letters, that those letters map to actual sounds, that they're, you know, sounding out the Target. So that's why it's important. The pointing is helpful because you'll quickly discover, are they just recognizing this logo thing as a visual whole, or do they understand that letters carry meaning and that they're related to these speech sounds? So I would, as a parent, if you were curious, if you think, oh, my child's a genius, they're reading already, like, so point to the individual letters, talk about those, raise their awareness of those. And they may be the genius that is reading at two. Most aren't.
But it's more common for them to just kind of start associating things in their environment and, like, knowing the label for it with a symbol. But that is an early reading because letters are just symbols representing sound. So it's kind of like a concept they need to get.
Exactly. This sort of, like, alphabetic knowledge, this idea, or the alphabetic principle, that, like, these 26 letters are different than other lines or drawings we see out in the world. If you can imagine for listeners, if I have my index finger, like, pointed up above my head and I just drag it straight down in a line, if I were writing this on a whiteboard or a chalkboard, a child, how would they know if that's an I or an L or a line or a signpost? Or they only begin to know that this thing is special when we tell them. And so I always encourage parents to talk about, you know, these are letters, and letters are all made of lines, dots, and curves. And most parents will focus on the first letter of the child's name. There have been studies that find that kids learn, you know, their letter first. So my daughter's name starts with Z.
Oh. And
so Z's weren't common, you know, in general out in the world, but she knew the letter Z because of monogrammed things we had in the house, or we're calling her Z, and we're writing it in sand, or, you know, shaving cream on the side of the bathtub, or whatever. Again, it's about what we bring kids' attention to and how we describe it. So it's great to say, oh, that's the letter Z. Z says, like, in Zora, and it's made of these three lines. This one goes this way, and this one goes down this way. And, you know, just making letters a topic of conversation is really powerful.
Okay, so parents are talking, and it's take turns, ask questions, look and label and point.
Label and point.
And K is keep the conversation going.
Yes, you've got it.
And then we're pointing out, you know, letters and that they make sounds. Just that concept is really good. Is there anything else that you found is really practical advice for parents, even as we head into the summer? You know, there might be more time.
Absolutely. Together. One thing that again, I hadn't given it any thought. I wasn't a reading teacher. I didn't have a reason, as most parents don't, to think about the details of what do kids actually need to learn to read? But one of the important things is kids need to be able to hear the differences between sounds and words. So if we're talking to them, a child could sit here and listen to this whole podcast, understand every word, the meaning of the words, but they may not be tuned into those sounds inside of words. So that too is a skill that they have to learn. And that comes through just doing silly, like, word games and wordplay and nursery rhymes and all these different things that just bring their attention to kind of the sounds and rhythms within words.
That's what's so great with rhyming words, y'all. That's why we do rhyming words, because they're the same at the end, but different at the beginning. So they're like, oh, they're two different words, but they sound similar except for this part. So it makes them break the word apart. So rhyming is great, right?
Absolutely. So you say cat and then ask them for a rhyming word and they say mat and pat and bat. And suddenly they're really starting to focus on those initial sounds. Also, if you think of tongue twisters or nursery rhymes like Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers, things that just kind of emphasize certain sounds. All of these are playful, silly things you can do again at any time. Mm-hmm. You're in the car, so you can't point at text or talk about something visually, but you have all these opportunities to play games. People on car trips will look out of the window and try to find certain things on license plates or whatever. But there are these things that are sound focused only that you can do when your hands are busy or when you can't both focus on the same thing visually. So I think parents should feel incredibly encouraged that you don't have to do a lot of extra stuff. You don't have to spend a bunch of money. You don't have to go through a really rigid curriculum. I think the parents who do this best just make it part of how they engage with their child, and they find their different moments throughout the day to sometimes it's reading with them. It's always talking to them, talking with them, not talking at them, playing these games, pointing out letters, and you just sort of get in the habit, and it's incredibly powerful. Some parents work at night. Some parents are sleepyheads. I was a sleepyhead. At bedtime was not a good time for me to try to read a book. Luckily, my husband is like more of a night owl, so he could do an attentive, high energy read aloud at night.
So you're not saying don't do the read alouds. So we're clear, y'all. We're just saying don't put all your eggs in that basket. Like, there's more to kind of get the brain ready for reading. That's not actual reading, but it's important skills. And where I used to see it as a speech therapist is when there's a difference for a child. So let's say they don't have joint attention. And so when the mom is pointing at the dog, the child is not following the point. And so that label on the animal that's furry is not going there. The child's looking at a stroller and hearing dog. And then the next time dog comes up, they're looking at a person. The next time, so the label is not getting a consistent object that is helpful. And so language learning gets delayed. Also, the ability, the hearing part that you were talking about, the ability to break the sounds down. Like, if you have a lot of ear infections, that's the reason why, as a speech therapist, I noticed that in a case history. Like, chronic ear infections can impact reading long term, which I know it's not to guilt a parent, but it's also to recognize, like, this is something to pay attention to. Like, how is my child able to hear the difference between two words? And if I have two in front of me, like a mat and a cat, and I say cat, can they point to the cat? Not in a testing way, but just like, oh my gosh, there's the cat. Do you see the cat? Show me the cat. And like, they can't. That's important to know. Might need to get additional help in those areas.
And every state has a variation. They're all called something different, so that makes it tricky to find it. But every state has a birth to three program that offers early intervention, like assessments and interventions if you qualify. But like, speech and hearing is so critically intertwined with later literacy outcomes. And the challenges start early. Vision also, but I think speech and hearing is something people don't think about as much in relation to reading, because they think of it as visual, but it really is matching speech to print. So when kids are learning to read, they are learning to recognize on paper words that they would understand if you spoke those words to them in a conversation. So they're not going to be able to read a paragraph and understand it if they wouldn't have understood you saying those same words. So I think that that's a helpful way for people to think about it, that you have to have this bank of words and knowledge and understanding orally. And you also have to have what you get from phonics, that just detailed matching of this letter makes this sound, or this combination of letters makes this sound, or because English is fun, some letters make multiple sounds.
Just because English is fun. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Complicated. my husband works very hard at his job, and with us at home, in just the patience he shows with the four teenage boys. But where that stress comes out is during his sleep, when he is grinding his teeth. And so if you are also part of the 30% of Americans who grind their teeth, then your smile, like Bruce's, needs protection. And there is no better solution than Remy's Custom Fit Night Guard. Now, we are not talking about a system that's changing your teeth like braces does. No, this is just a night guard to help you keep from grinding your teeth. And both dentists and teeth grinders will recommend Remy because it is a custom fit night guard. I loved this process. One, Remy sent right to our door the impressions kit. And while I was a little nervous I would mess it up, they gave great step-by-step instructions on how to get the best impression. And I will tell you that I did not follow the instructions perfectly. And so they so kindly set up a time for us to meet with a dentist via Zoom so that she could give us the best instruction and was literally guiding us through the whole process. Remy ships then the custom fit night guard, which is made in the US in Las Vegas, and then you get it back and start protecting your teeth. And Bruce has been loving it. It came with a protection for his top teeth and his bottom teeth, and it's fitting great. The best part with Remy is you're so confident you'll get a perfect fit that they offer a 45 night perfect fit guarantee or your money back. So you're not having to go to waiting rooms, no overpriced bills, just a better way to protect your teeth while you sleep. Try Remy risk-free at shopremy.com/DMA and use the code DMA to get 50% off your night guard at checkout. That's 50% off at shopremy.com/DMA with the code DMA. Thank you, Remy, for sponsoring this episode. So the other night we went out to dinner with friends and I had rented a dress from Nuuly and it was a more tight-fitting dress and I needed to get out my good shapewear, and I for sure reached for my Honey Love shapewear. This is what I love. Not only does it hold me in where I need it to be held in, but that with the gusset in the middle, it makes bathroom visits a less overwhelming ordeal. If you know exactly what I'm talking about. I am so thankful for Honey Love because summer's here and it's time for really fun dresses and effortless cool looks. And whether you have a fun dinner or a party or a wedding, it is important to get your shapewear right. That's why this episode is brought to you by Honey Love, because they are redefining modern shapewear. They have real comfort with serious support. They have this thing called Mesh Sculpt. It is the ultimate summer shapewear. It's usually lightweight shapewear doesn't offer much hold, but the strong shapewear is pretty heavy. But with Mesh Sculpt, that changes. It is breathable and lightweight, but you don't sacrifice its power. It keeps you cool while still delivering the sculpted silhouette that you want. Honey Love's targeted compression smooths and shapes exactly where you want it to and eases up where you don't. And it works with your body, not against it. It has this flexible boning on the sides that stays in place with no rolling or shifting. You know what I'm talking about, where you're constantly having to adjust your shapewear mid-conversation. So moms, treat yourself to the most comfortable shapewear on earth and save 20% off site-wide at honeylove.com/DMA. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off. That's honeylove.com/DMA. After you purchase, they're going to ask you where you heard about them. So please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the new standard in shapewear with Honey Love. Is there anything else that you learned in your research that moms and dads should know about early literacy?
Yes, and it's really a team sport. So I love just the name of your podcast, Don't Mom Alone. One of the six big things that parents can do is connect to other resources and learn to recognize what's out there that you can take advantage of to help your child. So pediatricians, I think parents often think of librarians and teachers. So the teacher should teach them to read at school. The librarian should help them find the books. And, you know, that's wonderful. Those are wonderful touch points, connections to help your child on their journey. their pediatrician is huge. Go to those well child visits. I have talked to a number of pediatricians who say a lot of parents get to a point where they only bring the child in when the child is sick. But like when they're little, those checks on development and all these other things are really helpful. So view all of these people as kind of part of your team and take advantage of that. I mentioned the birth to three early intervention programs for kids who qualify. Those are available everywhere, although there are some wait lists somewhere depending on their needs. But also just know that you can tap into these public resources, and then also parents of older children can be a great resource as well. And part of your role as a parent, I would say also, is to think of yourself as an educational advocate for your child. You are the ones who are with them from birth through wherever, from conception to career, right? The parent is the constant. They're going to change schools. They're going to change teachers. And you're the person who kind of maintains that history of, you know, my child did have this hearing challenge, or they had this speech challenge, and that affects this, and you should be aware of this, and having those conversations with teachers. Parents are, you're going to be the first one to sense when something is off oftentimes. So it has to be you that advocates for your child and gets them the help that they need.
Well, and this is another reason too, to be in community with other moms and see other kids of similar ages. So you can be like, oh, your child's pointing, huh? Mine doesn't point. Or, oh, and not, we're not comparing to be like, mine's lesser than, because I have seen where some advanced verbally, others are advanced physically, or like there's, but at the same time, it's just good to be in community and kind of exchange notes. And in when it's your oldest child, you can sometimes think, oh, this will sort itself out. But the earlier, the better. I'd rather get help and be wrong.
Absolutely.
Then wait. So if you've been on the fence, hopefully this conversation, if anything, is getting you, oh, well, I have been kind of concerned that they're maybe not as verbal as my friend's kids. And I just check it out. And if it's just a normal delay range, you're good. You know, you can set that worry aside and you can move right along. But yeah, if you have any kind of thoughts on that, might as well get the help, seek the help.
Absolutely. I encourage parents to read like the developmental milestones. Also, when kids are school age, read your state's standards, like for what they're supposed to be able to know and do at each grade level, just to give you a sense of what the expectations are. Now, the developmental milestones that are published by the CDC and other organizations, those are based on like actual data from real children, the average. And again, they're averages. So that means some kids are above, some are behind. But it just gives you, I like to say, a point of departure for discussion with your pediatrician. It's not you reading the guideline and feeling terrible because your child doesn't do the thing, or patting yourself on the back because they do. It's just sort of giving you just a base level of knowledge so you can have smarter conversations, more informed conversations with whoever you encounter, whether it's a teacher or a doctor. And then when it gets to these state reading standards, those are more aspirational. Those are not averages of where kids actually are, because when we get the National Assessment of Educational Progress every 2 years, we see that most kids are below the grade level expectations, and certain demographics of kids are way below. So those standards aren't averages. Like, we don't even aspire to where most kids are because it is too low of a level. But again, it just gives you a point of reference to start having conversations and to start giving your child what they need to get to their next level. So we have to remember also that reading is a years long journey. I'm a better reader now in my 40s than I was before. Why? Because I've had like more time on task. I'm like reading all these academic research reports now and asking people questions about it. So it's still a matter of learning and growing and building vocabulary and building knowledge. And so it's not the end of the world if your child is labeled behind at some point. It's more just a way for you to figure out what help they need, what support they need, what resources they need.
And not shying away from that. Yeah. Okay, so the book is called Reading for Our Lives, The Urgency of Early Literacy. There's that word again. And the action plan to help your child. So tell people in it, it's not just a bunch of research, and there's some really practical guides here, y'all.
Yes.
Give us some of that.
So I picked the title Reading for Our Lives to be as dramatic
as possible. It sounds. Yes, yes.
Because I do think that sometimes we think now in this age of AI and, you know, all this technological advance that like people will be able to get around literacy weaknesses with voice texting or something. But as we've talked about so much today, reading is so deeply connected with like understanding, with knowledge, with words. It's important for connecting with other people. It's critical for pretty much everything you need to do in your adult life, right? So I feel like people need that reminder. So that was the title. Like, we're not just reading for a test score. We're not just reading a novel for entertainment. Like, we are reading to protect our rights, to advocate for our health, navigating. Health literacy is a whole other area where people are really struggling to understand prescriptions, to comply with like what they're supposed to do, to understand how things, different medications are interacting with each other, yada, yada, yada. But, and then the subtitle, the urgency of early literacy and the action plan to help your child, is that's the heart of the book, the really practical actions you can take. And so most of the book, the research is in the background for like nerdy parents like me who want all the details. There's like all the footnotes in the back so you can find these studies and call up these professors like I did and ask all your questions. But the book itself is simple things like talk. It's taking turns. It's asking questions. There are two chapters devoted to those oral language skills. There's a chapter about the alphabet and how you make letters a topic of conversation. There's a chapter on phonemic awareness, which is just, again, recognizing those sounds within words. And so it breaks everything down, tries to avoid jargon. I think in the phonemic awareness chapter, I call it sound awareness because that is more memorable. Like, think about the sounds. And we talk about the larger chunks of sounds within words. So we talk about syllables because most kids are going to discern those bigger chunks. Again, if you're doing nursery rhymes, if you're clapping things out. So we talk about syllables. We talk about rhymes, as you mentioned earlier. We talk about getting kids to pay attention to those beginning sounds and the ending sounds in words. And then we break it all the way down to the sounds within words. I talk about spelling because that's in one of the later chapters, because that can be fodder, again, for a lot of fun conversations when you're talking to kids about how words are coming together. Like, oh, afternoon is made of after and noon. It's, you know, think noon and after, and you're looking in the words and you're thinking about the meaning of words and prefixes and suffixes, but you're also attending to individual letters. So it gets into some of that. But again, always in a practical way that can be done by real parents in real life.
And then this isn't like, okay, here's your book list. Get these books. But do you help guide parents on like, yes, all the things we're talking about verbally, and when you're reading a book, here's some ways to read it with your child. Like here's some types of books to get, like you were saying, knowing the developmental norms that fit with that child. Like, you're not going to read War and Peace to a 2-year-old. Right. We always learned like zone of proximity. You're just like one zone ahead of where they are developmentally.
Right. You want them to like stretch, but not be totally frustrated or bored or disconnected to the material. So the book does not contain like a treasury of book recommendations. What I found more helpful as a parent, because you're not always going to have those books on hand. You're not always going to be able to order it. It's not always going to be available at the library. So the way I like to look at it is, helping people understand what they could get out of whatever books they have. So if your child is this age, it really doesn't matter what's inside of the book because they're chewing on it and they're batting it and they're throwing it. And so in those cases, it's like you want a book that's durable. You want a board book. You want the indestructible books that they can slobber on without tearing up the pages. So I do touch on that, but more of it is with the things like bringing attention to letters. Parents think, oh, I should get an alphabet book. But then when you actually look at many alphabet books, they have these gorgeous, elaborate illustrations that in many cases make it hard to see the letters because it's this, you know, amazing, creative, artistic expression. Yeah. And then often the words, to your point about level, you know, if it's too much, oftentimes the alphabet books, if it, the theme is an animal, for example, it's starting with an aardvark and all of these different
always
things.
The aardvark or the anteater. Yes.
So those aren't always the best way. Sometimes the best way to teach something is just to write a letter on a piece of paper and just talk about it, or to point out the L on your t-shirt that says love or whatever the situation is. I do on my website is mayasmart.com, which is M-A-Y-A-S-M-A-R-T. I have a resources section and there I do publish a lot of book recommendations. And so sometimes it will be for a particular age range, you know, like board books or this type of alphabet book for this age range, or thematically, you know, books for Mother's Day or books to celebrate the World Cup, because there's something powerful also in reading a range of books on a topic your child cares about. Mm-hmm. And then they see those vocabulary words in different contexts and it sort of just deepens the connections and their understanding over time of reading those books. So reading books is important. You can do it at lunch, you can do it in the morning if you're not a bedtime person, but it doesn't have to be perfect and your narration doesn't have to be dramatic. What matters, and it doesn't have to be an hour of the child sitting still in your lap, depending on their age, it might be 4 minutes of them, you know, running around at your feet while you read because they're not looking at the print. Yes.
Having the books available is something I found, like getting baskets around the house, not just keeping them like up in their bedroom. And so then where we were all day, the books were still in the bedroom for nighttime reading. It's like, oh, we need to get some baskets downstairs and have them kind of around so kids can grab a book and pop in my lap and or in the car. Like we would keep some in the car. Or like if you have a diaper bag, a couple in the diaper bag is while you're waiting in the doctor's office because you don't necessarily want to read the books that are in the doctor's office sometimes.
Like don't put that one in your mouth. The board.
No, we don't want that in our mouth. And then I remember when I would teach like it was a three-year-old class. There were three 3-year-olds. And I might've said this in another episode, but we taught vocabulary based on categories. And I think that that is how our brains are naturally wired for vocabulary. So just keep that in mind. Like this summer, maybe if you are one of those moms who really enjoys planning out your summer, you could have different themed weeks and cover a variety of vocabulary each week with different activities that are on Pinterest. I mean, you could go get it, mom. Like you could really go after it, but don't feel pressure to do that. That's just a little tidbit. Like if you want to get a bunch of books, you're going to go to the beach as a family this summer, get a bunch of different books that have a beach theme that brings up different vocabulary that all fits that category. That's a great way to learn words that they're going to be exposed to on the trip.
Absolutely. And don't forget the value of sometimes we overlook the things in our neighborhood or our community. Or
yeah.
So there's vocabulary there
all the time
too.
Everywhere. Your kitchen is full of things. You know, Maya, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate connecting with you, and we will put links to the book and to your site and all of these resources, and y'all can learn more from her going forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I love your mission in this community you've created.
Thank you. Okay, moms, I hope if you are in that stage that this was helpful for you. And if you're not in that stage, maybe you listened to this whole thing, please share whether it is your daughter, daughter-in-law with little kids or a friend, a neighbor. Always is helpful when you share episodes that maybe you're not in that stage, but you know someone who is. And I'm going to pray for those of us moms in that stage and just for God's guidance. Lord, I know that when it comes to developmental markers and milestones that we can get overwhelmed and we can feel like reaching them is all on our shoulders. And I pray, Lord, that while we have amazing experts who can guide us and that there are some intentions we can take that ultimately you care most about us loving and caring for our kids and their most basic needs. And trusting you and partnering with you and looking to you, Lord, for each of our kids and not comparing and contrasting with others. If it seems that another child, a friend's child, is farther along than ours, or our child is struggling and is at this specific area, or that, you know, that there is some diagnosis related to reading and it's causing heartache and pain, I pray, Lord, that you would meet that mom right where she is, that she would see that there is even purpose in this pain, and that while challenging and not an easy road, that you have not left them there, and that there can be so many good and kind things when you work through those struggles with us, and how we get to see your compassionate, gracious hand guiding us. I pray, Lord, for each mom and dad listening. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, y'all, join me back here next week. I'm going to take a gander at my podcast spreadsheet. It looks like you guys get to hear a conversation with my new friend, Nikki Koziarz. I think that's how you say it. I'm going to look that up. About my recent compassion trip to El Salvador and just hearing more about her story. It's just a good reminder of how do we actually activate our kids to care about a hurting world? How do we help them catch vision beyond what they know? So meet me back here next week. Okay, bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.